Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Dear Blood River Radio family, thank you so much for holding on. I consider a groundbreaking show, if not for United States Radio, it's for Blood River Radio. We're touching a subject that very few people will touch, and I'll tell you why we're doing it. If you go back to our website and read it, it says, one of the things that Blood River Radio, we have pledged to do, me and my staff, that we are going to uncover and we're going to shine light and raise noise, make noise on lies, lies that have become sacrosanct and sacred in our society. And I would like to say probably the holiest of holy, the most untouchable lie probably in, at least since the end of World War II, is the lie told about the Holocaust and the lies told about the German people, the wonderful German people. And to quote a friend of mine, this lie of the Holocaust is a patented, trademarked, industrial god. It's the god, a jealous god, that will have no other gods before it. And if you don't believe that, go to any place in the United States, into a bar, into a store, and just start telling people that there was no such thing as the Holocaust as the media has talked about. We have two of the bravest people I know in the world. We have Miss Monica Schaefer. She is a German-Canadian. She is of German descent. Her family immigrated to Canada. And we also have Miss Bertha Voss, who is currently living in Germany. These two people, I don't know of anybody who's more qualified to put on this show about the Holocaust, this expose, to expose, to shine the light on the dead corpse, the rotting corpse, this rotting, filthy lie that's been used to destroy a lot of our youth, to destroy our youth's conscience. And before I go back to them, we talked about the lie. The lies went on the cover, and Miss Monica Schaefer talked about the lie. And you heard, you've heard me read this before. I'm going to read it again in the future, probably. I'm in the King James Bible. This is quick. This is St. John, chapter 8. Verse 44, Jesus is talking to the Pharisees and the scribes, the uppity-up, the higher muckety-mucks of the Jewish society. He says, here's what he says to the Jews. Ye are of your father the devil, and the lust of the of your father you will do. He was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he speaketh a lie, he speaketh of his own, for he is a liar in the father of it. And I'm telling you, people, I'm telling you flat out, the ancestors of these liars that Jesus Christ was talking to, their ancestors, these thousands of years later, are still right here with us, and they are getting their marching orders from Satan the devil, the same Satan the devil that they gave the marching orders to the people who crucified Jesus when Pontius Pilate said, you want Jesus? And they said, no, give us Barabbas. Let his blood be on our hands and the hands of our children. Those are the people then. Those are the people now we're talking about. Now with that, I'm going back to you, Miss Bertha Voss.
So, thank you. Monica, are you still there?
Oh, I certainly am.
Fine.
Yeah, we had wanted to talk about the concentration camps themselves. But, you know, just before we get there, a segue from some of your commercials for Blood River Radio in between, they are so relevant. And this Holocaust story is completely relevant to the white genocide that is being perpetrated all over the world, the war on whites. And one might ask, how does this connect? Well, we could also ask, why is the Holocaust story still so relevant? You see, I had people tell me, well-meaning former friends would say, when I was really getting persecuted in my former hometown of Jasper, Alberta, small town, and, you know, I was I became the witch to be burned at the stake when I came out with that short video in 2016 called Sorry Mom, I Was Wrong About the Holocaust. Anyway, well-meaning former friends, they said, Monica, why do you concern yourself with that? It's old. It's, you know, more than 70 years ago. We have more pressing problems now. We have so much that we need to be working on right now. This is old. Well, I kind of have to laugh at that type of a statement, because if it was so irrelevant, then they wouldn't persecute truth tellers. They wouldn't care what we say about it, and they wouldn't be drumming up more atrocity stories by the day. I mean, they're building more Holocaust museums, but, you know, all the time. They're going up everywhere, and it's becoming a law in many places that this Holocaust studies need to be in the curriculum for grade schoolers. So obviously there is a relevance, and this is like a linchpin lie. When this one collapses, and I can tell you it is collapsing very rapidly, when this one really does unravel, that the house of cards comes tumbling down. And, you know, it relates to the guilt cult, that, okay, Germans are guilty, and by extension now all whites are guilty, because we also are falsely educated about all the evils of the world are the responsibility of the whites.
This was a great surprise to find out for me in 2016 and later on to see this. And I never thought about this. I always was thinking, okay, it's only Germany which has the blame, or is the, start the Second World War and all doing all and being responsible for all the bad things that happened. And then I found out a bit clearly that this has spread out all over European, or yes, for my view, I would say European countries. And it was a bit strange to see that, because I never realized it and that it was, that this was so widespread.
It has to do with this, another really big weaponized words, because Eddie mentioned some of these weaponized words earlier, and probably the most weaponized word nowadays is racist. Mm-hmm. You see, so,
yes.
And they even say only whites can be racist. Nobody else is racist. And, you know, I like to turn these things around and say, oh, you see, they don't want us to think further about this. The word racist is just automatically like, this is bad, 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 evil. But really what we should know is that there are differences between the races, that we recognize that there are differences between the races. That's okay. It doesn't mean we hate anybody. It just means that we recognize the reality of that.
Miss Monica, Miss Braveheart, we have to go to a quick break. We will be right back after this break.
All right.
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win. They lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm. By a friend of Medjugorje. The strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm. Available on Amazon.com. Or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
Hello, friends. This is Jacob from Blood River Radio. We call the kings into account and tell the truth to shame the devil on this show every week because we are of the firm conviction that our cause cannot succeed without true revival amongst the remnant, amongst that principled minority of the dispossessed majority. Now is the time to stand and be counted, to do like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who would not bow down to the false idols of their day, even under pain of death, like the 300 mighty men of valor who surrounded the Midianites with Gideon, or the 7,000 men that God told the prophet Elijah had not bowed their knees to Baal in a time when even calling fire down from heaven would not awaken our kinsmen from their slumber. If you are encouraged by our labors in the trenches for the kingdom and the cause of truth, liberty, and righteousness, I urge you to consider supporting this program. No donation is too small. We can do with thousands or even hundreds what our enemies and the powers and the principalities of this present darkness need tens of millions to do. So please donate today at BloodRiverRadio.com and help us take up the hedge and stand in the gap against the great evils of our time.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues that affect the American West, its people, lifestyles, lands, and wildlife. The Loving Liberty Radio Network is proud to support the publisher's efforts to provide an active forum for solutions that preserve the vanishing American cowboy, farmer, and sheepherder. Each issue contains informative articles on life in the American West, along with breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of the cowboy spirit in our day. Each issue of Range Magazine also features great gift ideas, like the 2020 Real Buckaroo Calendar and the book Tales from Out There. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Just click on the shopping cart. The Loving Liberty Radio Network salutes the spirit of the American West and those who are keeping it alive at Range Magazine.
Excuse me, Captain. I know this may sound silly, but can you fly?
Nope. Never had a lesson.
Well, thank you, all you Blood River Radio family members out there. And I do remember and the people that have been helping us out, and I do consider you family. I really do. Even the people that haven't helped us, just keep listening and spreading the words. But I'd like to make a quick comment to my two extremely brave ladies. They're warriors. They're more warriors than just about any man I know. I don't think any other woman would possibly come on and do a show like this, so not in these day and times. But, you know, ladies, I wonder why, you know, speaking about Holocaust, et cetera, the great Alexander Solzhenitsyn said that there was at least 66 million Europeans, non-Jewish Europeans perished from the 1917 all the way through up until Stalin was kicked out, until probably you know, until the fall of the Berlin Wall, I would imagine. But primarily from 1917, 1932, 33, during the Ukrainian Holodomor, you know, where people, mothers were eating their own children. They were turning to cannibalism. They were starving to death. They were marching the Jewish-led Red Army, where they were marching people under Trotsky, were marching people to the camps in Siberia where millions perished there. I wonder, ladies, why that is never out in the news. And one other final fiery comment. I'm sure this is going to raise the ire of a lot of people. You know, if in fact this is true, if Alexander Solzhenitsyn was telling the truth about 66 million people being perished at the hand of these Jewish-run gulags, and it cannot be denied, Stalin's Cheka that ran the gulags were led by Jews. If they killed 66 million innocent whites, Christians, Europeans, do you think if Jews got killed later on in the Second World War, do you think maybe it was, do you think maybe it was payback? Do you think maybe it was what goes around? And I'm going to tell you something else to my Judeo-Christian Baptist friends. If God is in control, like you say he is, and I know he is, and if the Jews are truly God's chosen people, where was God when he let these 6 million poor innocent Jews perish? Was God totally incapable of saving them? Was he just could not defeat the evil Nazis in the German army? And with that, I'm going to throw those comments back to you, Miss Monica. You were talking before we went to the break.
Yeah, okay. First of all, and I know you know this, Eddie, but this didn't happen the way they told us that there were 6 million Jews genocided in World War II. I mean, it just simply by mathematics, it doesn't work out. And that's what we're going to carry on here with, to dispel that myth. But, you know, I think I get your point that you're making, that what the Jewish Bolshevists did in Russia, and if people knew and understood, and actually at the time, many people did understand that, and that is why so many soldiers from different countries joined Hitler's army. They joined in to fight the Red Terror because they knew what the Red Terror was capable of and what they had done in Russia. And not only did they kill these people, they didn't just come with a bullet to the back of the head. Some, yes, but many were absolutely tortured in the most heinous, unimaginable manner. The Cheka that you talk about, they were given free rein. In fact, they were encouraged to use their imagination to do whatever type of torture to the death of the white Christian Russians that they could think of. And they took out entire classes of people. The priests and nuns, and the churches were burned. They took out landowners. They took out teachers and doctors and lawyers and educated people. They basically lowered the IQ with their slaughter. You know, for a while, the IQ was dropped of Russia just because so many were killed, and they were left with people who were absolutely terrorized, terrified, not really any leadership qualities in the people who were left. So that's what the Red Terror was. And this is what people from many, many countries, like I say, joined the Wehrmacht, I guess that's what it was called, they joined Germany in this battle. That's not talked about in our schools. We're not taught that, are we? Before we go on to talk about these concentration camps, I wonder if you have some comments about that, Birte, about this history that came before.
Yes, my first history teacher was talking firstly about the Boer Wars, which was, when I look back at it, quite interesting because it was the Boer Wars or the history of South Africa is not, it's normally not mentioned in combination with the World Wars. So there was a pretext, so to say, and the Boers, especially the women and children, were put into concentration first by the English into camps, and were also tortured and hungered down, which was not really nice thing to do. And then I think early this year we have a French-German TV who it's called Arte, who did a three-part documentary on the Gulag archipel in Russia, which what I found quite interesting, very good, so to say. It was not so dressed, or it didn't have so much your perspective, Monika. It was a bit more neutral, but it also was pointing that in 1917, when they started, they had also these Gulag camps, and they also were describing quite with pictures and with witnesses what happened there, and what it was, how would you call it? Mulmiges Gefühl, you know?
Oh, not like, it gave you a very uneasy feeling, I guess. I think that would be, I'm not sure if that's exactly the best translation.
And I had the impression maybe this was also a kind of inspiration to talk about, or inspiration for, especially for Hollywood movies, how it was in German concentration camps. So it was my impression when I saw what the Russians, or what happened in the Soviet Union before the Third Reich came to rise and was establishing.
Yes, and you know that in the Boer War, isn't that where concentration camps,
by the British. They were the first by the British. When you look at the timeline, they were, I don't know what the war was, were between
1911 until 1914. I don't know the dates correctly, but around about this, around First World War, they had the Boer Wars down in South Africa.
Yes, and who was in the camps? Who was incarcerated in these concentration camps?
A lot of women and children.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The white people.
Also
like
raped
it was the,
and tortured and hungered down.
Yes.
I don't
yes.
know how
so,
many survived this, but it's also not a nice read.
No, like no, the these were brutal, is my understanding, is that many did starve. And, you know, we think of concentration camps like people who haven't really looked into this but just are going by the Hollywood version of history, we automatically think of the gas chambers, the Nazis, and evil. And yet concentration camp during war is not unusual. There were concentration camps in the United States, in Canada at various times during, you know, like in Canada, Japanese were interned. I believe they were in the United States as well. Eddie, you might correct me if I'm wrong, but there were other, you know, there were times and places, there were concentration camps. It's war. And
Ms. Monica, we have to go to a quick break. But in answer to your question, yes, we did place Japanese citizens of several generations into concentration camps here in the wonderful, peaceful United States. People will be right back after this break. And don't you see it.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News with John Hunt.
The Navy's top admiral will soon decide the fate of the ship captain who was fired after pleading for commanders to move faster to safeguard his infected crew on the USS Theodore Roosevelt. Admiral Mike Gilday will decide whether Navy Captain Brett Crozier stepped out of line when he went around the chain of command and sent an email pushing for action to stop the outbreak. 660 sailors on the aircraft carrier, now docked in Guam, have tested positive for the virus and 7 have been hospitalized. One sailor has died, and more than 4,000 of the ship's 5,000 crew members have been moved for quarantine. The review won't be limited to Crozier. It will also look at the command climate on the ship and higher up within the Pacific-based fleet to determine if there's broader leadership issues. Gilday could decide that Crozier acted in the best interest of his crew and was unfairly removed, and could reinstate him as captain of the Roosevelt. This is USA Radio News.
So, I don't know if you saw this, but there was just this big study about anxiety among us. Really interesting in this study about what can keep us up at night. One of the top stressors out of all the things to worry about is paying for health care. A huge majority of us say we're worried about that. It's totally understandable, but there's an affordable alternative to health insurance. It's MediShare. It's a Christian healthcare sharing ministry, and it has worked beautifully for more than 25 years. And not only do people save lots of money, they get access to a huge network of doctors. They get to take advantage of 24/7 live access online where they can talk to a doctor and even get prescriptions. And of course, there is the savings. With MediShare, the typical family saves $500 a month. That can help you sleep easier too. There's a lot to love about it. No wonder it's grown so much. Here is the number to find out more. Call 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
Governor Greg Abbott announced a plan to open up Texas, the second largest state by population and one of the largest economies in the world. Despite initial resistance to a statewide stay-at-home order, Abbott's executive order shutting down non-essential businesses went into effect April 12th. Abbott announced a strike force of doctors, state leaders, and business owners to oversee what he called a phased opening of the economy. Schools, however, will remain closed for the remainder of the school year. State parks will open first on April 20th, but visitors must still wear masks or face coverings.
The Federal Bureau of Prisons have now said 465 federal inmates and 296 staff members have coronavirus. More than 100 inmates and 25 staff members have recovered. 18 inmates have died from the virus. The Bureau also announced its first potential staff death from the virus. Robin Grubbs, who was working at the United States Penitentiary in Atlanta, was found dead in her home and then tested positive for the virus. This is USA Radio News.
Well, dear Blood River Radio family, I thank you so much for tuning in tonight. Hey, we have my brother, Rich Hamblin, responded to our conversation. He said that concentration camps were used in Cuba around 1896 to 1897. During the Boer War, he said they were used between 1899 and 1902. And yes, Ms. Bertha Voss, thank you for bringing that up about the British concentration camps. Oh, golly, I wonder why we never have that in the history books. Where those concentration camps in South Africa there, he said approximately 25,000 people perished in the camps. May have been 35,000. He just sent me a little message. He said mostly women and children and old men. The khakis. Those wonderful British people. They burned practically every farm in the Transvestal in the Orange Free State. As a matter of fact, Rich and his family and our co-host, Matthew Goodwin, they were in South Africa, saw some of these memorials there. He said they went to a site, one of the memorials in Hopetown, South Africa there. So, yes, Ms. Bertha Voss, you are right. The British had concentration camps way yonder before even the First World War started in Europe. So back to you, ladies. I forgot which one of you ladies were speaking. You wore your tough as nails, girls. Continue on.
Well, let's get to these concentration camps in Germany. First of all, Jews were not the first to be interned in these concentration camps. Correct me if I'm wrong, Bert, but that is my understanding and the reading of it, that it was other prisoners, you know, like that were the first to be interned in these camps.
But I think political. Version,
political prisoners, I'm not sure, yeah, okay. And but, the Hollywood version is that these are just Jews, and that their sole purpose was to gas the Jews, and they were rounded up and brought from all over the place and brought to these camps, and then they were gassed, sent into the gas chambers. And, you know, there's all kinds of gruesome stories around that, but none of that can be proven. And, in fact, all the evidence points at the fact that there were never any homicidal gas chambers in any of these camps. And what the official historians have said, and I'll quote something from Simon Wiesenthal, and that name will be familiar to people. He's also known as the quote-unquote Nazi hunter. So Simon Wiesenthal, and I think there exists a place that's called the Simon Wiesenthal Center or something like that. He wrote in the Stars and Stripes, I think, I'm not sure if that's a newsletter or newspaper, January 24th, 1993, he wrote, "No extermination camps on German soil." There were no extermination camps on German soil. They were in Poland. Okay, so one might ask, why is it that they were all behind, the Iron Curtain, you could say? Perhaps it's because if they were said to be on German soil, well, after the war, people could have checked that out more easily, whereas it would be more difficult to do the on-site research behind the Iron Curtain, although then the researchers did go, and I want to name some of those absolute heroes who, Bert and I were looking at what we can research from books and documentaries and then use our thinking skills to figure out what makes sense and what doesn't. But some of these researchers who went on site, like Robert Faurisson, may his spirit, may he rest in peace, because he did die, I think it was just couple of years ago or last year. Anyway, he was persecuted and beat up several times, many times actually, 10 times I think he was attacked, and a couple of times left for dead. And persecuted. They made extra laws in France against him because he was a professor who did some research, like a lot of research, and he was meticulous with details. And
I would like to add also something.
Yes.
You can also look from a different perspective on this, because the German Empire at that time maybe had, maybe 400,000 Jews, and when you look at it on the total of the population, it's very few, or it was very few. While Poland, on the other hand, had 30% Jewish population in their country. So, when from my view, it's not so surprising that the death camps or these camps are in Poland, because there was a kind of large population which
That's certainly true, but okay, that's another explanation for that.
Just another perspective on this.
Mm-hmm. But here's the thing, Dachau is in Germany, and
yes.
In Dachau, when tourists go there, they are left with the impression that there are gas chambers, that there were gas chambers there, and that it was an extermination camp. And also, American soldiers who went into Dachau at the end of the war, they're all left with the impression that there were extermination camps. And I read about that actually quite recently.
So my teacher he told us in school, that they made SS soldiers build these douche showers and all this, so that it looks like a concentration camp. He told us.
Bert, I'm going to chime in, ladies. I'm going to chime in just a minute. Our my brother Rich, who's a very educated man, he's a Vanderbilt grad. In case you don't know about Vanderbilt, it's called the Harvard of the South. And he sent me some notes here that I remember from reading a book previously I had. I don't know where it went. It was from the Barnes Review. But he says this about the internment camps. Before the war, internment in camps was for a specific set time for specific crimes or antisocial behavior, i.e. sodomy. Sodomy used to be a crime here in the United States. It was you would go to the stockade in the army if you convicted of sodomy once upon a time when we lived in a different country. Also, he said, and this is a salient point, the so-called death camps were always in Soviet-liberated territory, where only the communists had access to and thus control of the evidence. And that is the glaring salient point right there, ladies. And I'm going back to y'all.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Thank you, Eddie, for interjecting with that. That is exactly what happened. And they have admitted about the Auschwitz in particular that these, so-called death camp facilities, they built things after the war to make it look like that. But, I mean, there have been researchers that have gone on site, and Folieson is one of them, and the Ernst Dundl, not himself, but during the Ernst Dundl, the great Holocaust trials in Toronto in the 80s, he had sent Fred Leuchter over to Auschwitz, and Fred Leuchter was the expert on execution, the expert in the United States. There was really one and only expert, and he was sent, and he went as a believer in the Holocaust, and he did say to Ernst Dundl that
there are a lot of a lot of people who were believing in this and started researching as a non-German, normally they are Americans or Australians and this stuff. Mm-hmm. And then they come back empty-handed, which is really surprising.
Exactly what happened with him. And he did say to Ernst Dundl before going over there, I will testify whatever it is that I find. Mm-hmm. And so they took a gamble because, you know, was Ernst Sandl so confident with his conclusions that there were no gas chambers? He had the confidence that, well, he's going to report what he finds. And sure enough, mm-hmm. Fred Leuchter came back with a conclusion that not one single person was gassed to death in Auschwitz or the other two camps that he had visited and done forensic evidence. And it was all recorded, meticulously recorded and documented, and he had somebody filming it as well. I mean, it was meticulous, you see. But, of course, what the organized Jewry did after that is try to discredit Fred Leuchter. I mean, that's how they do it, right? So what is their evidence? And one of the things I really did want to get into today was what came out at the Great Holocaust Trial. But I think that most of what the physical aspects of it we're going to talk in the next next show. Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Yeah.
Well, you heard the music, Miss Monica. We have to go to another quick break. So hang on to your hats, people.
Okay.
This might be the greatest show we've ever had. We'll be right back.
Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
I'd advise Mr. Trump to stop whining and go try to make his case to get votes.
The press has created a rigged system. They even want to try and rig the election.
Well, I tell you what, it helps in Ohio that we got Democrats in charge of the machines.
And poisoned the mind of so many of our voters.
At the polling booths, where so many cities are corrupt and voter fraud is all too common. And then they say, oh, there's no voter fraud in our country.
I come from Chicago. So I want to be honest. It's not as if it's just Republicans who have monkeyed around with elections in the past. Sometimes Democrats have too. You know, whenever people are in power, they have this tendency to try to, tilt things in their direction.
There's no way.
You start whining before the game's even over. Whenever things are going badly for you and you lose, you start blaming somebody else. And you don't have what it takes to be in this job.
Hi, I'm Patty, wife of former Congressman Steve Stockman. In Congress, Steve sought impeachment of Eric Holder for his corruption of the Justice Department and his fast and furious gun running that caused Border Agent Brian Talley's death. Steve called for arrest of Lois Lerner for her contempt of Congress as it investigated her targeting of conservative nonprofit groups. After 4 years, four grand juries, and millions of tax dollars, Steve Stockman is in prison. His case involved four checks to nonprofits. DOJ has one standard for Hillary Clinton, but another for folks like President Trump and my husband. We've spent all our savings, all Steve's retirement, and much of mine. Steve Stockman has fought for you and America. Won't you join me now to fight for Steve? To help, text FIGHT to 444-999. Text FIGHT to 444-999 or go to defendapatriot.com. defendapatriot.com.
A Venus is a 44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off. You've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
Well, do you, punk, Sam says. People, I cannot believe, I know you've heard me say this before, how fast this time is going, but don't worry. God willing, We're going to bring these ladies back for as long as it takes. As a matter of fact, Matt texted and said we probably need to keep them for 3 weeks. But, you know, I'd like to also say, well, my dear brother Rich, who's he's a walking encyclopedia. Like I say, he's a Vanderbilt grad. You know, they do turn out some good guys up there. But anyway, historian David Irving, a guy who I greatly respect. Do you know he used to accept the gas chambers theory until the Ernst Zundel trial? That's what Rich texted in. The man's full of, he's just absolutely full of information. People like to also reiterate what we have, what we're doing tonight. We have the one and only Miss Monica Schaefer, Braveheart. We have Miss Berta Voss. I guess we have to name her Sparta, Miss Spartacus. But, you know, we're doing this Holocaust series. I know it's a sacred cow. A lot of people out there in the news media are probably going berserkoid because they can't believe that some people are not going to accept this stuff. But once again, before I get carried away, Miss Monica Schaefer, of German descent, now living in Canada, but she has many, many relatives still living in Germany. Miss Berta Voss still lives in Germany. They have parents, grandparents, etc., that have lived through what we're talking about. And listen, we have to. Let me tell you what, people. If you don't expose a lie, there's more ways than one to lie. You can lie about somebody verbally. You can tell them you saw them smoking dope or something. Or you can just not bring something up. But we cannot let these lies lay around and just contaminate, poison the blood of our youth. Youth that are yet unborn with these Holocaust lies, these homophobic lies, these xenophobia lies. But the most sacred cow of all, I'm getting ready to shut up, is this sacred God, this patented, trademarked God of the Holocaust that will have no other gods before. But you know what? We're going to kill that fake God. We're going to do that like Elijah destroyed the gods under the satanic Jezebel. With that, people, we're going to go right back to Miss Monica Schaefer, who was speaking before we went to the break. Go ahead, Miss Monica, Miss Braveheart.
Yeah, and I know we don't have a lot of time left, so what I would like to do is tell you that in our next show or two, or however many it takes, we will talk about physical evidence and non-evidence as it is, or according to, you know, what their evidence is non-evidence. We'd also like to talk about the courts, the trials, and how they have conducted those kinds of things. And you talk about the numbers and what they use, so that people really get an idea of how these lies work. But, you know, segueing from what you said, by way of deception, thou shalt make war. Now, that is the motto of the Mossad, so that's Israel's Mossad. By way of deception, thou shalt make war. I mean, if you have a motto like that, and then couple that with your scripture reading about, you know, ye are the son of the devil, what Jesus said to the Pharisees and whatnot. I mean, this is what we are dealing with. I'd like to turn it over to Berta, because I know we have very little time left, and we were still, you know, wanted to talk about these camps.
We've got about 7 minutes, Miss Monica. Oh, we have a good 7 minutes left. Go ahead.
Good. But, well, we had talked about, when we were talking privately before the show, but Berta, you had talked about these camps, what the perception was at the time, and then what the perception is afterwards in Germany. Do you want to address that a little bit? Or what was going on in them at the time that I think you know what I'm talking about, that you had an idea of what you wanted to say about the camps before and during and after the World War II. And also, well, okay, here's something I'd like to say. After World War I, the atrocity propaganda that was spread, because by way of deception, thou shalt make war. So every war is somehow triggered and started with a bunch of lies, right? Like Iraq war, babies being thrown out of incubators, and just all kinds of things. Weapons of mass destruction, you know.
We must make the people accept that they are going to
That's right.
So this is how you're doing it.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And so after World War I, the atrocity lies about Germany were admitted. were admitted, and, you know, it might not have been widely publicized, but at least the mainstream line, they did admit that these were lies and those were lies. But after World War II, it didn't work that way. These lies escalated, just like what Sefton Delmer had said in 1945, that quote that I read earlier, we will escalate these. We are only just beginning now, he said, with the atrocity propaganda. So that's the relevance of the Holocaust lie is about the very structure of the world we live in and about white guilt, and that if we protest, you know, invasion of foreigners into our lands, then we are racist and that will lead to the next Holocaust. This is the basic a nutshell of the story and how, why it is so important to tear this lie down and bring it down. And, you know, on that note, I mean, let's talk about some of the evidence. They say that the Holocaust has the most evidence, the most well-documented event in history. That's what we are always told. But when it comes to it, they have no evidence. And these trials in Toronto were extremely important.
So there must be another reason why it is so perpetrated. And let's go back to the rabbis, so to say. Because
yes,
when you read, for example, Menuhin, he states that the rabbis told their common Jewish people that when 6 million Jews are dying or giving their lives or sacrificing, then they will get back to their holy Israel again. And this is what obviously is a big concern for these people, that they can get back their homeland.
Yeah.
And so it's there is why we have this 6 million.
Yes, is this magic number, isn't it? And the 6 million was brought up in many articles and headlines before World War II, that, you know, 6 million Jewish souls are perishing, or 6 million Jews are under threat, or 6 million Jews. Like, this was all the way back to World War I and in between. And people can research that. They can find those, you know, articles. These are archived, and people have also made videos that talk about the 6 million.
And then I came across another thing on YouTube maybe a year or 2 years ago. It was its name is Ask an Israeli, and this guy is also asking about this. Do you believe the Moshiach comes, and when do you, or what do you need that the Moshiach comes? And he was also asking Orthodox Jews, and they say Esav, or what is it? Oh, Esau, which is, we are seen as Esau, and that he has to die, or that they must perish, and then the Moshiach comes. And that's why I think they are pushing the Muslims to come to Europe. Do you not understand that they have some kind, or that they're accepting an agenda? When this comes to pass, then and two other things I can't remember now have also come to pass, and then the Moshiach comes, and then they will have the Holy Israel, and what was it? He was also asking that they are going to allow to have slaves, and that they are the chosen people. So he's asking them directly in English, and they are answering this, you know, into the camera openly. So.
Yeah.
No problem.
Oh, yeah. They'll each have 2,000 or more slaves, and that will be, you know, we are the Graham.
Yeah, this number changes a little bit, but
yeah,
down the line, it's.
Dear ladies, we are getting close to the end of the hour. So just keep. I'm not rushing you at all. Just keep in mind, we're getting close to the end of the hour.
Yeah.
But while I've still got you on, I want to book y'all, if you will, to come next. Can y'all come next Saturdays? The first hour.
I do believe that would work just fine for me, yes. Mm-hmm.
How about you, Ms. Berta?
Berta,
can you come next Saturday?
sisters.
Miss Bertha.
25.
Miss Bertha, can you come? Can you?
Yes.
Can you come next Saturday? Okay, great. We'll have y'all back next Saturday. But continue on. We're just about out of time. But I wanted to book you while we still had you on the air because it's not the easiest thing to get in touch with y'all. So can you continue on?
A good thing to point out right now before we finish today's show is, you know, I was talking about all their evidence. They say it's the most well-documented event in history. But what their evidence is based on 100% solely is on eyewitnesses. And eyewitnesses, that is unreliable. And I'd love to talk about that more next week.
Well, you're sure going to get a chance. Thank you so much, ladies. Thank you, Miss Monica. Thank you, Miss Bertha. Thank you, audience. Thank you, Sam.
Welcome.
People, I hope you have got something out of this. I won't say enjoy because we're slaying a sacred dragon, a sacred lie. But tune in. God willing, we will be back here next week, the 25th. You heard the lady say they were coming back the 25th. That's one reason I asked them on the air. I like y'all to know that they were coming back. Thank you, people. We'll see you next week. God willing. Bye-bye.